It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Early in-person voting is underway for the April 4th spring election. Wisconsin voters elect a new justice with the ideological control of the court at stake. We hear from both candidates separately with a flip of a coin. Milwaukee County Judge Janet Protasiewicz is first, followed by former State Supreme Court Justice Dan Kelly later in the program. Call in with questions and comments for the candidates, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Judge Protasiewicz, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. I'm very, very happy to be here.
Well, make your case for us. Why should people vote for you over your opponent?
Well, I'll tell you, my opponent, in my opinion, is a partisan extremist with predetermined outcomes as to what he's going to do on cases. And he's also controlled by the Republican Party of the state of Wisconsin. You know, I've been a judge in Milwaukee County for the past decade. Prior to that, I was a prosecutor. I have spent my entire career protecting the people in the, you know, in the county of Milwaukee, and hoping to do so, you know, in a statewide election as well. But, you know, I'll tell you, the main reason when I started thinking about this race is, you know, the extremism that I just kind of touched on, but really getting back to common sense with our Supreme Court, getting away from the, you know, extreme partisanship, bringing change back to our Supreme Court. Those are the reasons that I've decided to run. You know, I've been a common sense prosecutor, a common sense judge.
What does common sense mean? Can you define that a little bit more?
Yeah, it means all of my decisions are rooted in the law, and they're, you know, based on, you know, the Constitution. They're based on the statutes that we have. They're not based on, you know, predetermined outcomes. And that is what I think is so critically important. I think my experience sets me apart from my opponent, which I've just talked about, both as an assistant district attorney and as a judge. But I also think, you know, the fairness component absolutely sets me apart.
You debated former Justice Dan Kelly for an hour on Tuesday. If you had had more time at the debate, what else would you have talked about?
I would have really liked to have talked about my background in more detail. I would have really liked to talk about the need for a recusal rule in more detail. I would have really liked to talk about the fact that, you know, he sat on the advisory board of Will, that's the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, handled six cases during the 4 years that he was on our Wisconsin Supreme Court, six cases. Every one of those cases came out in favor. He always voted, you know, for Will in every single one of those cases. I'd want to talk a little bit about that. I'd want to know why he didn't recuse himself on those cases, why he doesn't think a recusal rule is necessary. And I'd want to know, is it really just coincidence that the party that you were on the advisory board for, you would vote in their favor every single time you had the opportunity? Every single time you had the opportunity, you know, I'd really like to ensure the public that they really understand the depth of his ties to the Republican Party. And I am in no way maligning the Republican Party. I am hoping that I can earn the votes of many, many Republicans. But I am maligning somebody who, you know, advised on the fake elector scheme. We're supposedly in this nonpartisan race, and we've got somebody who's, you know, advising on the fake elector scheme, which goes right to the heart of our democracy.
I want to I just want to pause right there as you talk about recusal, this, you know, requiring justices to withdraw from cases if there is a potential conflict due to perhaps money spent in their races or a lot of money. You know, can you provide an example when you recuse yourself from a case?
I can provide several examples of when I've offered to recuse myself, and one in which I have. You know, I recently recused myself on a case where I knew one of the expert witnesses. And typically what happens when that occurs is we don't find out who the expert witness is, you know, early enough in the proceedings for one of the parties to ask for a substitution or for me to remove myself. But I have an ethical duty, if I know somebody on a party and I know somebody well, to make sure all the parties know about that. And then I offer to recuse myself. In that particular case, the expert witness is testimony was going to go right to the heart of the matter. It was a financial dispute between the parties, and she was a financial expert witness. And one of the parties said, yeah, I'd prefer to have a different judge, and I recused myself. But I just had a case 2 weeks ago with a former police detective in Milwaukee who I knew. And I don't think the other side knew that, you know, when we started our hearing. And I said, I have to tell all of you, you know, I know this detective. We've had cases together over the years. And why don't we get the case retabbed for you? I'm assuming you'd prefer to have a judge who doesn't know one of the parties. And the other party, after consulting with their attorney, said, nope, no, you're a straight shooter. We'd prefer to have you stay on the case. So I will offer, absolutely offer, when I think that there's any potential that any one of the parties would walk out of the courtroom and think, you know what, maybe I wasn't treated fairly because, you know, she knew somebody. So I always offer. Sometimes parties take me up on it. Sometimes they don't.
Talking with Milwaukee County Judge Janet Protasiewicz about her campaign for a seat on the Wisconsin Supreme Court. You can join in with your questions, 800-642-1234. Your opponent, Dan Kelly, is questioning that you would be fair on the bench, and he says you engage in virtue signaling, this, or expressing your personal virtues about issues that would come before the Supreme Court. And let's take a listen. Here's Kelly during an interview with PBS Wisconsin in January.
If you think as a candidate that you should be virtue signaling to attract the votes of a certain body of Wisconsinites, what you're telling them is that you are not committed to the constitutional order.
And you've talked on the campaign trail about staying impartial on the bench. Can you be trusted to be fair on the bench?
Absolutely. What I've told everybody is this is a statewide race with very high stakes. The citizens and the electorate in the state of Wisconsin, they deserve to know what a candidate's values are. They absolutely deserve to know what they are. I've been equally clear that every single decision that I make will be rooted in the law, every single decision. So versus my opponent, who, you know, what I say about him is, you know, actions speak louder than words. You do a little poking around and you can see what an extreme partisan he is. Like I talked to you about his work with the Republican Party. You know, I've talked to you about his, the fact that, you know, he's represented pro-life groups as an attorney. And I understand that that doesn't mean that you align with their views necessarily. I absolutely understand that. But you look at Wisconsin Right to Life's website and they've endorsed him and they describe why they've endorsed him. So, you know, you can have a candidate who's upfront and tells you about their views, or you can have, you know, a candidate where if you do a little bit of research and a little bit of Googling, you can find them out just as easily. So, you know, quite frankly, would you rather have the person who's upfront about it or the person who's hiding those views?
Along those lines, Scott in New Berlin wants to know if you would recuse yourself from cases involving abortion or other topics that you have talked about with your personal views.
No, I've indicated that I would recuse myself. I have pledged to recuse myself from any case in which the Democratic Party, you know, of Milwaukee County, of the state of Wisconsin, the Democratic Party is a party because they have contributed a substantial amount of money to my campaign. And I think it's only fair that I do that. There would be no need to recuse myself for any other issue that I have a personal view on. You know, we all have personal views. But we all follow the law, and I've been very, very clear about that. You know, despite what my personal opinion on any issue is, you know, you don't know what a justice is going to do until the case comes before the court, until, you know, you hear the arguments, until you review all of the briefs, until you analyze the law. So, you know, like the issue signaling or what the words that my opponent used, you know, it's just basically telling the electorate what my values are, not making any promises, not making any pledges as to what I would do on any particular case.
But, you know, if you are in the high court and reviewing Wisconsin's 1849 abortion ban, how would you consider the weight of one constitutional right versus another, such as religious and privacy rights?
Well, I think you weigh it all, obviously. You weigh everything. I don't know what the arguments are going to be that come before the Wisconsin Supreme Court. I don't know how they're going to be framed. So, you analyze everything in regard to, like I said, the briefs that you read, the arguments that are made, the oral arguments that are made, and then you do your research and you make a determination. There was recently a case in, Wyoming in regard to, the ban, and there's, I think, been injunction litigation. And you just look at, you look at what is before you and do an in-depth, deep dive analysis.
Milwaukee County Judge Janet Protasiewicz, running for the state court's empty seat occupied by retiring Justice Pat Rogensack. Call in with questions for Judge Protasiewicz, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. In the hotly contested, officially nonpartisan state Supreme Court race, we hear directly from each candidate. The race is now the most expensive in American history. Milwaukee County Judge Janet Protasiewicz with us now. Former Justice Dan Kelly with us later in the program. And that was decided by the flip of a coin. Bring questions throughout. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Judge Protasiewicz, our listeners, they stepped up. They submitted questions seeking to understand your views on election maps. Wisconsin's current election maps were drawn by Republicans, upheld by the state Supreme Court. And you say the court made a mistake in that ruling. What did the court get wrong?
I say that the maps are rigged, and I stand by that statement. And here's why. Wisconsin's really a battleground state. We have extremely close statewide elections. You look at the fact that our governor won his reelection bid, but, a Republican United States Senator won his reelection bid. You look at the fact that our Attorney General, a Democrat, won his reelection bid, and the state treasurer, a Republican, won an election bid. And those were all on the same ballot last fall. We are a very hard-fought state. Our 10 electoral votes are very, very sought after. So we've got this state where these races are really close, where generally the state could go red, the state could go blue. And we have districts drawn that really don't represent the people or give them the ability to have their vote count the way it should. And I say that because approximately two-thirds of the seats in the state Senate and two-thirds of the seats in the state assembly are red. And how can that possibly be fair when we're such a 50-50 state? And then you look at the eight seats that we have in Congress, and six are red and two are blue. And they really should be closer to 4 and 4, right? And, that's part and parcel of the, extreme gerrymandering that we have in this state. Many years ago, not that many, I guess, in 2011, Act 43 was, brought about that started this extreme gerrymandering, and the gerrymandering has only gotten worse. But what I think it's critical that your listeners understand is back in 2011, when those first gerrymandered maps were being drawn, who was advising the Republican Party about drawing those Republican maps? None other than my opponent, right? So, he was busy doing that. And then, he, continued work that, in my opinion, really is at the heart of tearing down our democracy. I think our maps should hopefully we'll be able to take a fresh look at them at some point. But
when
Justice Carr, can I just finish
sure,
one?
Sure, sure. Mm-hmm.
I just want people to understand that everything I do is, rooted in the law. And if they're interested, take a look at the very well done dissent by Justice Karofsky in the latest case in regarding the gerrymandering and the maps. And I would say that I agree with her dissent. It really, really lays out the situation very well. And I'm sorry for cutting you off.
No, that's okay. You are very comfortable stating your position on the election maps, very comfortable using the word rigged and stating that position, but uncomfortable stating a position on the constitutionality of our state's abortion ban. Why is that?
I wouldn't say that, you know, I could certainly make arguments about the abortion ban in both ways. I've already told you what my, you know, personal opinions are and my personal values are in regard to a woman's right to choose and a woman's right to make reproductive health care decisions. I've also indicated that despite the fact that I think that the maps are rigged, however it comes to the Wisconsin Supreme Court, I'm going to be fair, I'm going to be impartial. I'm making nobody any promises about any issue that's going to come before the court. Every single decision will be rooted in the law, every single one.
Talking with Milwaukee County Judge Jana Protasiewicz about her campaign for a seat on the Wisconsin Supreme Court. You can join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. I want to circle back to trust in the court. How worried are you that overturning recent court decisions or precedents could reduce trust in the court?
Well, I think that that does, in fact, reduce trust in the court. I think that the, you know, lack of a recusal rule, you know, causes problems. But I think the situation at this point, when I talk to people, and, you know, I'm traveling all over our state, and our state is absolutely beautiful, and I'm traveling all over, you know, people don't think the court got it right in regard to the maps. They don't think the court got it right. They think that it's a sham every single place I go. And, you know, I've said this before, I think it's hard to sell to a group of reasonable people that our maps are fair. So, you know, can precedent change? Of course, precedent can change. Do we like to change precedent? Of course not, only as a last resort. But I think that some of these issues, you know, need to be looked at and have a fresh view so that the people of the state of Wisconsin feel like they actually have a fair shot when they go into the courtroom. So they don't feel like there's a, you know, real thumb on the scale against them based on, you know, predetermined outcomes.
Turning to appeals, the Supreme Court may review rulings by lower courts. Is our state doing enough to prevent bad decisions or misconduct by lower court judges?
I don't know that there's really misconduct by lower court judges. You know, it's interesting how we, you know, handle things in Wisconsin. You know, I'm a circuit court judge. We handle those cases, you know, all day, every day. You know, we're in the trenches, so to speak. Our Court of Appeals has to take every single case that is appealed and they look at it. They're not really setting policy. They're not developing the common law. They're an error correcting court. And, you know, if somebody appeals something that I've done, they come back and they either say she got it right, she got it wrong, she didn't do enough, send it back and have another hearing on it. And, you know, they'll make some decisions like that. I'm not seeing, quite frankly, misconduct on the circuit court. So I'd be interested in hearing what you're referring to because I think I may have missed it. But then, you know, the Supreme Court handles, you know, just a handful of cases that people ask it to take. And they take the cases that they think are really the most cutting edge cases that are going to develop the law, that are going to develop the common law, and that are going to make the most sense for the people in Wisconsin to have some clarity.
Would you support lowering that threshold so minority viewpoints on caseload priorities are more likely to be considered?
Tell me how you think that would, tell me how lowering the threshold, in your opinion, would allow for that.
I'd be really curious. I'm the one asking you the questions. I mean,
I'm happy to answer.
Well, the support of four or more justices is required before the court will take on cases. Would you considering lowering that threshold?
You know, okay, so that's what you mean. I'm sorry, I wasn't understanding.
Oh no, okay, sure.
The question. I don't know. I mean, we'd have to look at it. I mean, I know that there is a mechanism at this point for some cases, you know, to so-called leapfrog to the Supreme Court without, you know, going through the entire system. And I've got to tell you, quite frankly, I don't know, you know, just how heavy those caseloads are, and I suspect, and I know that those justices are very busy. I don't know if more cases should be brought before the Supreme Court or not. It seems to me that they do a pretty good job of selecting the cases that will have the most impact on people in the state.
Judge Protasiewicz, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. I was very, very happy to be here this morning, and have a lovely day.
You too. Milwaukee County Judge Jana Protasiewicz, Wisconsin Supreme Court candidate. Still to come, former Justice Dan Kelly as part of our Supreme Court candidate conversations ahead of the April 4th election. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The April 4th spring election could flip the ideological control of our state's highest court with an open seat and a 10-year term in the balance. Former State Supreme Court Justice Dan Kelly and Milwaukee County Judge Jana Protasiewicz are vying to replace a retiring conservative justice. Call in with your questions, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Former Justice Dan Kelly, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Well, thank you so much, Kate. It's great to be on with you.
So lay it out for us. Why should people vote for you over your opponent?
Well, I think it all has to do with an understanding of what the job requires. So as I've gone around the state of Wisconsin, I've talked about what it means to be a justice of the Supreme Court. And the distinction between my opponent and me is pretty stark on that matter. So it's the difference between the rule of law on the one hand, and the rule of Janet on the other. I think there's enough room on the Supreme Court for the Constitution or for my opponent, but not both. So a vote for me is a vote for the rule of law in our Constitution. And here's why. The whole promise of the rule of law is that we can know in advance what the law requires of us. And that way, those of us who choose to live our lives according to the law and in conformance with it, we can know what the standards are. And we can choose our decisions in a way that honor those requirements. The rule of Janet, though, because she has said that she would be above the law, that she would feel free to change the law, she subscribes to living constitutionalism, the basic premise of which is that the judges can change the meaning of our Constitution and the statutes. And if that's the case, then we can never know in advance what the requirements of the court are. What the requirements of the law are. All you would know if my opponent reaches the Supreme Court is what her requirements are, but only in retrospect. So, and I think the other big thing is this. So for all of the scaremongering that my opponent has done, I think she might forget from time to time, but I've already served the people of Wisconsin as one of their Supreme Court justices. And all of the work that I did as a justice is in writing and available to the public for everyone to see what I did with the authority that they loaned to me. And that's one of the reasons I listed all of the opinions I ever wrote as a justice on our campaign website, justicedanielkelly.com, because I want people to be able to go and look at the actual work that I did and grow confidence that what I did was simply use the existing law to decide the cases that came before us, without regard to my personal views or my personal politics, because that's the job of a justice, right? So we leave the lawmaking function to the political branch of government, which is the legislature. And in the courts, all we do is answer legal questions, and we answer them according to the law that the legislature gives us.
What do you do when you think the precedent is egregious and should be overturned? What do you do in those situations?
Yeah, so precedent would be egregious and in need of overturning if it conflicts with the law. So one of the greatest examples of that is the difference between Plessy versus Ferguson and then Brown versus Board of Education. So Plessy set up this idea of separate but equal amongst the races, but there was never any support in the Constitution for such an idea. And that precedent lasted for a long, long time. But finally, the Supreme Court in Brown versus Board of Education revisited that and said, wait a minute, that Plessy decision was wrong from day one. It was always incorrect. And so what they did, because Plessy was not consistent with the Constitution, they overruled it. So that's the rule when you're dealing with precedent. You follow it unless and until you discover that it's mistaken, that it got the law wrong. And when you discover that it was wrong, your obligation as a justice is to overturn it.
Let's go to a caller, Jeff in Superior. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, good morning. I was very happy to hear this explanation about stare decisis, because I think it does differ from your opponent, sir. And if you could expand on that, I'd appreciate it.
Stare decisis, to stand by things decided in Latin, referring to precedent in courts. Go ahead.
Yeah. So, you know, where we start is this. It's a presumption of regularity. We presume that those who came before us did their jobs well, did them correctly. And in a lot of ways, stare decisis is an expression of humbleness, right? So we look at those who came before us and we recognize that they were well-versed in the law, they were intelligent, they did their best job possible. And so we presume that they got it right. And that way, you know, the work of the court doesn't get bogged down in having to re-examine every single proposition in the law from the very bones of the law. So we follow what we've done before, but sometimes a party will come to us and say, wait a minute, I think you got this wrong, and here's why. And then we consider that. And if there's merit to that argument, we study it deeply. And if we discover that we've gotten it wrong, then we set aside that prior precedent. So for example, in our own courts, I wrote the lead opinion in the Tetra Tech versus Department of Revenue case, and that dealt with whether the Supreme Court should defer to executive branch agencies in their conclusions of law. And over a very long period of time, if I recall correctly, about 80 years, the court had developed a doctrine of sorts in which they would defer to the executive agencies. And it hadn't started that way, though. It started with simply a recognition that those who administer the law in the executive branch are well-versed in it and have intelligent things to say about it. And so we'd listen carefully to it. And oftentimes that'd be persuasive. And we would then use that as the conclusion of law. But over time, it developed into a hard and fast rule that if the executive agency had a certain amount of experience in dealing with the statute, that the court must defer to the executive branch agency. So that came before us in the Tetra Tech case, and we researched out how that doctrine developed, and we saw that over a period of about 80 years, that doctrine grew from a simple recognition that executive branch bureaucrats do a hard and good job. It grew from that into complete deference to their conclusions of law. And we looked at what the Constitution has to say about which branch is supposed to authoritatively declare the law. And we saw that it's the courts, not the executive branch agencies. So when a case comes to the court, we have returned to the constitutional foundation that we don't defer to executive branch agencies' conclusions of law. That's something that we determine for ourselves. So that's kind of how stare decisis works in that context.
I'm going to reintroduce you here as we talk with former Justice Dan Kelly about his campaign for a seat on the Wisconsin Supreme Court. You can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. Justice Protasiewicz is questioning that you would be fair on the bench, says your background shows a partisan leaning. And here she is during an interview with PBS Wisconsin in January.
He was recently touring the state with, of all people, Michael Gableman on an election integrity tour. What were they trying to do? Peddle the big lie that the 2020 election was stolen? We all know that election wasn't stolen. We know in his last race, he was doing some of, if not all, of his campaigning out of the Republican Party headquarters.
You talked on the campaign trail about your methodology for deciding cases. Can you be trusted to be fair on the bench?
Of course. And let me just address that clip that you just played. So first off, my opponent has shown a disturbing propensity for simply lying. I mean, just straight up lying. So this idea that I toured the state with Michael Gabelman, that never happens. Just, I was on a tour of the state. I didn't see Mike anywhere.
But you did work for both the state and National Republican parties the past 2 years, and including advising on the scheme to have fake electors cast ballots for former President Trump.
Nope. So let's pick this all apart. Let me finish with this bit about Mike, though, because my opponent just makes stuff up. I would have known if Mike was there. He's hard to miss. And he wasn't. And Janet just created that out of thin air because she thought it would sound good. And that's a deplorable tendency that she has. Now, I have, I'm an attorney, obviously. That's one of the requirements to be a Supreme Court justice. And one of my clients has been the Republican Party. And they asked me to do a tour of the state to help people understand how the election system works. And so I did. Now, my opponent, of course, tries to turn that into something nefarious. And she does that in part by lying about who was on the tour. But once again, that is just a pattern for what she does. Every single thing that she has said about me in this campaign has just been one lie after another.
Okay, so clearly that is dispute. Okay, let's turn to abortion now, because we heard listeners who submitted questions seeking to understand where your views are on abortion. And while you've declined to, you know, state a position on the constitutionality of the 1849 ban, you are endorsed by pro-life organizations. And so if you are in the high court and reviewing this 1849 ban, how would you consider the weight of one constitutional right versus another, like religious and privacy rights?
Right. So this is, and this goes, that's a great question, because it goes to the very essence of what the job of a Supreme Court justice is. And that's one of the things that's been a huge difference between my opponent and I about talking about our personal politics. So that's virtually all she does, is she goes around the state. Now, I understand that our personal politics have nothing to do with the work of the court. So, for example, with the question of abortion, how would I address that issue? I would address it in the same way that I address every single other issue that has ever come before the Supreme Court or ever will. I will address it according to law. And the rule is this: you apply the statutes to the extent that they're consistent with the Constitution, and you do it without regard to your personal views or personal politics. So, and this is another, I think, a...
So how do you do that, though? How do you shed your political beliefs, your values, all your biases? How do you rid yourself of that feeling and emotion?
Yeah, and that's that is one of the first obligations a jurist has, is to figure out how to do that. So for me, it's a three-step process. The first step is to acknowledge that every jurist who has ever sat on any bench in the United States in its entire history has always had political views. And if you ever come across a jurist who says that he doesn't, he's not being straight with you. The second step is to commit to setting those aside, to do the work of the court, to simply answer legal questions without being influenced by politics. And then the third step, and this is the critical area, is to have a methodology by which to accomplish that. So my methodology is this: I start with the law that's applicable to the case, whether it's a constitutional provision, statutory provision, regulation, common law, whatever it might be. And then I use rigorous logic to move from those premises all the way down to the conclusion. And when you're done, you should be able to look back and see an unbroken chain of logic between the conclusion and the premises. And if you can, that's your guarantee that the conclusion is commanded by law and is not influenced by politics, because logic doesn't care about your politics.
So what is what is your rigorous logic then on the 1849 ban?
Well, so that's, and I think that's a great question, because it demonstrates the difference between how questions come to the legislature versus the court. So in the legislature, the question will come, shall there or shall there not be a ban on abortion in Wisconsin? Or shall there or shall there not be exceptions to a ban on abortion? And what would those exceptions be? That's how questions are presented in the legislature. Those are political questions. When they come to the court, they come in a legal context. So for example, I know that there's a case already pending in the judicial system with respect to the 1849 statute.
Yes.
And I looked at the pleadings when it was first filed, and I've not checked them since, so I don't know if the pleadings have changed. But when I looked at them, the challenge there was not something general like you would present to a legislature. It was very specific. So there's also a 1985 statute on the subject of abortion. And the question that is posed by the lawsuit is, did the 1985 law impliedly repeal the 1849 law? Now, that's just a question of statutory construction. And it's the kind of thing that we do all the time. So for the kinds of things you would look at in deciding that question would be, can you enforce the 1985 statute without contradicting the terms of the 1849 statute? If you can, then there's no repeal by implication. If you can't, then it is repealed by implication to the extent that there would be a conflict between the two. So that's the difference between the legal and the political branches. We don't deal in grand questions of what laws ought to be or what they ought not to be. That's what the legislature does. We deal with very technical issues like this one. Did a later statute impliedly repeal a prior statute?
Former State Supreme Court Justice Dan Kelly, running for a seat on our state's highest court, occupied by retiring Justice Pat Rogensack. Call in with questions for the candidate, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The high-profile state Supreme Court election has broken records for spending and primary turnout. We meet the candidates, hear their views ahead of the April 4th election. We spoke first with Judge Janet Protasiewicz, decided by the flip of a coin. Call in now with questions for former Justice Dan Kelly at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Let's turn to election maps. Our state's current election maps were drawn by Republicans, upheld by the state Supreme Court. Can you envision any situation where it would be appropriate to revisit that ruling?
That all depends on what the challenges that might be brought. So, so the question again before courts is there a legal issue that needs to be resolved as opposed to a political issue? Now, I understand that there is a fair amount of dispute about whether the maps are quote unquote fair. That is whether they, as a political matter.
Do you believe they're fair?
I think that's a political judgment to make. And as all political judgments are made, they're made in the legislature, not in the court. My view on whether they're fair or not is entirely irrelevant to anything in the world. So when maps come to a court for resolution, what you're looking for is a resolution to legal challenges, not political challenges. So for example, let's start with this. A map is almost entirely political decision. Where the lines are going to go, which communities are included together in a district, all of that, those are all political questions, which is why the Constitution commits the drawing of maps to the legislative branch, where we decide political questions. But there are some legal requirements that they have to meet. So for example, if you look at Article 4, Section 4, you'll see that the districts need to be of equal population. They need to be reasonably compact. They need to comprise contiguous territory. And then in addition to that, there's the Voting Rights Act that has to comply with. And those are all legal requirements. And so they are susceptible of being addressed in a court. But what courts will never do, or at least should never do, is steal the legislature's power to answer the political questions. Now, I understand from the debate just a couple days ago that my opponent intends to do that very thing if she's elected to the court and the maps come back to the court for consideration. She has said that she would steal that legislative authority. She would address the political questions that our Constitution commits only to the legislature, not to the courts.
It sounds as if you would not very much be interested in taking on any cases involving challenges to our state's currently drawn maps. Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, that's not necessarily true. What I'd be interested in doing is if there are legal challenges brought to the map, then
like,
I would certainly
like what? Can you give an example?
Sure. So, for example, if someone comes and says this is violative of the Voting Rights Act, absolutely, I'd be very interested in considering that question. If they say, the court that addressed it before just completely muffed it, and there are non-contiguous areas included in the same district. Yeah, I'd absolutely be interested in looking at that. I'm interested in looking at legal issues because that's what the Constitution commits the courts to addressing. Not interested in addressing political issues because the people of Wisconsin have said in their authoritative voice that those questions belong to the legislature and the legislature alone.
I want to turn to recusal. Judge Protasewicz supports establishing a rule for the Supreme Court that defines when justices should remove themselves from cases. Do you support establishing a new rule?
I would certainly consider one. When I was serving on the Supreme Court, a proposed rule did come before us for consideration. And unfortunately, it only really addressed half of the issues. And unless you deal with it comprehensively, it would just be a mess. So, I would always be happy to look at that because one of the things that we have as a responsibility is to ensure not only that we do our work according to the Constitution or according to the law, but that we are seen to be doing the work according to the Constitution and the law. We want the people of Wisconsin to have confidence that their jurists are not politicians. We want them to have confidence that their jurists are not being influenced by anything but the facts and the laws. And so recusal rules address that concern. And I would always consider an update to or refinement to our recusal standards because I think it's so very important that the people of Wisconsin have that confidence.
Former Justice Dan Kelly, thank you for joining us.
It's my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me on your show.
Former Justice Dan Kelly is a candidate for the Wisconsin Supreme Court. And earlier we heard from the election's other candidate on voter ballots, Milwaukee County Judge Jana Protasewicz. Spring election, April 4th. Find more coverage on this race at WPR.org, including past interviews with the candidates and coverage of their Tuesday debate. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.